With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Opinions expressed by the guests are not necessarily those of Judy Anderson and Associates, LLC, or the show sponsors. This show is for information purposes only and is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. For medical advice, please consult your personal veterinarian. Welcome to Jazz Up Your Animal's Life with Judy, where you'll learn from experts about the latest holistic and innovative methods to keep your animals healthy and happy, animal communication, the spirituality of animals, and so much more. Here is your host, Judy Anderson, and her co-host, Simba.
Hello, everyone. So happy you could join Simba and me today. How are you doing, Simba? We're thrilled to have a friend and wonderful contributor to the world of animals with us today. Anna Twinney is the founder of Reach Out to Horses, the most unique and comprehensive equine training program in the world. She's known around the globe for her highly acclaimed work as an equine specialist, natural horsemanship clinician, animal communicator, and Karuna Reiki master. Her effective methodologies create a stress-free, trust-based, true partnership between horse and human. And for almost two decades, thousands of people from all equine disciplines, walks of life, and almost every continent have sought Anna out to help them develop a relationship with their horses they never thought possible. Originally a British police officer, Anna began her career as a natural horsewoman with the legendary Monty Roberts, eventually becoming the first head instructor of the International Monty Roberts Learning Center. She's a regular contributor to a variety of national and international equine-related magazines and publications, including Equine Wellness, HorseLink Magazine, Holistic Horse, and Natural Horse, just to name a few. Additionally, her work has been featured on U.S. and international TV, radio, and internet programs, including Martha Stewart's Living, the BBC Fly on the Wall documentary, Living in the Sun, and also French TV. She's also been featured on equine networks, including Pegasus TV and Horse Lifestyle Holland. She has done so very, very much work with horses, and like I said, really is acclaimed around the world. And probably one of her most important things in life is that Anna has two wonderful men in her life, her husband, her terrific husband, Vin, and also Joseph, their awesome two-year-old son who's two and going on 102. He's such an awesome kid. So, welcome, Anna. It's so wonderful having you on the show. I never dreamed a few months ago this would be happening.
Judy, you did a wonderful introduction, and it left me a little bit speechless. It was beautiful that you included the family as well. And it truly is my pleasure to be here with you. It's been lovely to meet you over the years, to have you come to some of our functions, and to now be invited on the show is a special treat. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you, Anna. It's delightful. Your family, your whole family has just been so wonderful to me. I haven't met the four-legged ones, though, yet.
There's a few of those to meet. Definitely a few of them, and all opinionated and all, you know, exceptional with their personalities.
Well, that's because you allow them to be that way. That's wonderful. You allow them to be so much, much more. So, you know, Anna, could you please fill us in on how you started working professionally with animals and in particular horses? What was your, you know, in path in life that brought you to where you are right now?
You know, it is always fascinating to look back at individuals' paths and to see how it lays itself out. And if you had told me some 20 years ago that I'd be living in Colorado as a horse whisperer and animal communicator, it would have felt so far away and, in fact, probably not tangible in many, many ways. And so to watch this path and look back to say, okay, I was really trained and my life path showed me different openings and different opportunities which led me this way is pretty spectacular. And I can't even take credit for each individual step to say I created it. And of course you have that dream, and of course you have a hope to live another way. And I can tell you where some of it began. It was actually two trips to the United States. One would have been around, I believe it would have been around 1993-ish, and I went to Colorado, actually, to a dude ranch. And it was one of those experiences that you love. You know, I loved the wide open space, loved the horsemanship.
Mm-hmm.
And then I dreamt that I would be one of those wranglers. It was that thing, if the wranglers got the good gigs, they would round up the horses and bring them in. They would release the horses at night. And I just thought, you know, it's wonderful to pay for this, but how nice would it to be it and breathe it? And that was followed up in 1997 with a trip to Montana to a cattle ranch, where it's a working ranch, and we worked the horses, and we rode the fence line, we worked the cattle, and I was in my element, so much so that people weren't sure if I was going to return home. And those were the significant times in my life where I look back to go, okay, this was where my heart was singing. This is where my heart was open. This is where I returned to the UK and said, why can't every day be like this? Why can't I wake up to paradise? What is it about our society that says we have to work 48 weeks of the year because there you got 4 weeks off, and it's only 1-2 weeks that you can afford to go on vacation and really live this lifestyle? And I thought, I want to be different. I really want to be different. And so that is where I think it all began. And the heart opened, and I basically said, there's more to this. Now, Judy, but that's not the only piece. I had a head-on car accident. I actually... Had a car accident in the UK in snow, like in a couple of inches of snow, combined with my horse being pretty challenging, a Palomino, Carrie. She's still with us today. She lives out in France. And me looking for another way, because all the advice said, go harder, go with a harder bit, go with the spurs, go with the whip, try this. You know, she's basically dominant, she's bold, she's not listening, and this is what you have to do. Combined with an experience in the police force that led to 3 months off, being ordered to take 3 months off. So the three and the magic number three pieces in my life all led to one single path, one single route. So I guess if it was just one thing, like a head-on car accident, maybe it wouldn't have led there. If it was just Carrie, maybe it wouldn't have led there. But the three combined major incidences actually led me to Monty, and it led me to watching him in demonstration in the UK and then saying, you know what, I'd like to study this. And my whole dream back then was to study the language of the horse to bring it back to the police force. That was the dream, to say, okay, we communicate with people. There are no guns. There still aren't. And we, in those days, were pretty top in the police force to say, okay, let's look at communication, but take it one step further to train the officers to the degree of empathy and compassion that horses have, to read that body language, to read the energy. And so I took a year sabbatical to do just that, just learn the horse's language to bring it back.
Oh, wonderful. That's great. Now, we're going to take a very short break now to hear from our sponsors. And when we get back, we're going to talk more in depth with Anna about her wonderful, wonderful work.
She wants to know where the relationship is going. He didn't know it was going anywhere. Having an awareness of our differences can make or break a relationship. As men and women, we have no problem falling in love. The problem is staying in love. Janice Hoffman gives men and women easy-to-use tools to keep the passion alive in their relationship. The former training director for Mars Venus Institute, Janice Hoffman trained over 550 Mars Venus facilitators and counselors and developed curriculum for the Mars Venus workshops. Today, she is the award-winning author of Relationship Rules, 12 Strategies for Creating a Love That Lasts. Don't do more in your relationship. Do what you already do differently. Let Janice Hoffman teach you the skills to keep the passion alive. Get the passion back with Relationship Rules. Visit JaniceHoffman.com today and get your own autographed copy of Relationship Rules.
Are you single and ready for an extraordinary relationship? This is Jill Crosby, owner of SpiritualSingles.com, the largest exclusively conscious dating site online. We provide conscious, spiritually evolved singles an easy, fun, effective venue to meet other like-hearted spiritual singles. Join for free today and meet your soulmate, twin flame, poly partners, and or friends on SpiritualSingles.com. That's SpiritualSingles.com.
Okay, welcome back. We're now talking with Anna Twinney. She has told us about her life, and now let's get into the meat of her wonderful work. Anna, when we were talking about what we'd like to discuss today and share with others, you mentioned the next generation horse whisperer. And you also said that natural horsemanship, as it's now known, is about to become outdated. Would you please share with us why you feel that way?
Absolutely, Judy. And I actually want to give credit to one particular kind of horse, and it would be the Mustang on this journey of mine. Because without the Mustangs, I wouldn't have taken it to where I've taken it. I wouldn't have explored all that I have. I wouldn't have discovered all that I know today. And so when I went out to Flagazette Farms in California at Monty's Place, in those days I went out there to purely study, be a student, and I ended up grooming and riding racehorses, getting the racehorses ready actually for their sales. And what also happened is we had Mustangs come in, be it the famous Mustang was there, Shy Boy, but there were also two others on that lineup, Franco and Mustang Sally. But ultimately, a young Mustang called Chewy was the one that opened mega, mega doors for me. And so part of what I was doing there was taking care of Chewy and learning more about him, gentling him, in other words, getting him ready for people to handle him. And so Chewy showed me so much more than even my dreams thought were possible or even what I knew about communication in those days, to realize, look, he's now been taken off the range. He's in a domestic environment. He's not with other horses. What is his language truly about? If you go too fast, you can send them over a fence. If you go too slow, they'll keep you at bay. If they read the body language that well, they're reading your intention too. So that goes beyond the body language. Of course, you pick some of that up. But you get that energetic connection of what is he feeling, not just in the eye that he displays, but truly what is he feeling. He can have that oozing out of every cell of his body. And so I really enjoyed my time with Chewy and learned so much to say, okay, there's more to this. There's more to this than I'd reckoned with. And at Monty's Place, I became the head instructor, be it that everything aligned, that the stars aligned, be it that there was a degree of talent, or be it just that that was where my destiny was supposed to be. So I did watch these horses and watched with the body language, and soon, over a number of years, it became very clear that the horses weren't just reading the body language. It truly was about the person being authentic. What were they thinking? What baggage were they carrying? Where were they heading with this? What agenda did they have? What thoughts were they releasing out there because the horses were picking it up? And so it's very easy on hindsight to say, okay, in that six-year period, it became clearer and clearer that telepathy was a big part, that the energetic connection was a big part. But for me, it was about studying that and learning that and delving into it in its single modality to say, okay, I want to study the Reiki and other healing modalities, to not just look at the healing of the animals and the people, but to mesh this together to say, okay, there's a piece of it that's about the healing and the healing of the spiritual, mental, emotional, physical aspect of how we lay on hands or that we send the energy across a paddock across the world, but there's also that healing energy that we all hold that will support the horses. So it doesn't matter what realm we're looking at, be it the wild horse that I brought the energy forward to say, okay, I'd love to support you in this gentling process. So if they were colicking or if they were sick, if they were volunteering to be gentled, or in fact if they'd been adopted and that was the next step. So after all, many of these wild horses have been taken out of the wild. They're now in captivity. be it that we look at the 48,000 in holding pens or we look at the horses that have been adopted, they don't naturally just step into this environment to say, okay, I'm here now and I'm friends with this two-legged being. It delves into this energetic connection of what is your agenda. And so the energy piece is huge to say I mean no harm, and I may have a degree of an agenda if I want to sit with you. That can be seen as an agenda. But if we take out the true piece of there's a time limit, or the agenda is I'm expecting something from you, take all of that out to go, what is it you can offer today? What can I bring to you to support you in this process? We bring the energy forward. Now, as an animal communicator, we look at another depth of communication, which can cover the physical ailments, the behavioral issues, animals in transitions, animal on the other side, all of this where we are looking at reflections in humans. And we're not just looking at which dog bowl do you like, but truly, what is your life aspiration? Where's your trauma come from? Who manifested your trauma, et cetera? Is this a soul's contract, or is this something that mankind has brought forward? So the animal communication piece becomes huge. Now, when you're reading an individual horse for gentling purposes, to support them in behavior modification, to start them under saddle, to look at relationship building, that's one piece, the body language. And that's where the traditional natural horsemanship is, the traditional. That's what we learned some 15, 20 years ago. We learned the body language to say, let's focus in on the eyes or the position that we're taking, the proximity between us and the horse. Let's look at that. We've moved forward from that, Judy. We've moved forward into the energetic connection of what energy are you bringing. Now, of course, there's a correlation between body language and energy, but we could look at that to say, okay, I'm standing here passive, my shoulders are around, my eyes are down, but the energy still that I hold is that of boldness or that of directness, that of control, that of being able to take over, take that spirit down, etc. And if we look at the horsemanship, there's many different ways from the negative reinforcement, the punishment, the chasing or the driving, the roping. I mean, there's movies that have just come out this year, Gentling Mustangs, that include roping the legs and taking away all ability, taking away all the flight, and yet it's classed as natural horsemanship. So people will watch the movie, absolutely. They will watch that movie and say, this is natural horsemanship, and that includes the roping, so taking away the choice and the voice. And then you look at that to say, well, what if we thread in the energy? What if we thread in the telepathy? The next generation would be taking all of that piece out. So what does the roping mean? It means the trainer stays safe. You know, if you've got a Mustang in the pen and your job is to get that saddle on under a time limit and you're going to say, okay, this horse isn't willing, let's rope the leg to stay safe. We're going to take away his flight, take away his movement, take away his striking and his kicking, and we're going to do it anyway. Definitely seen as natural horsemanship, because there's many people out there that will say it's okay to use a stick for a forward motion, i.e. a stick on the ground for forward motion, because the horses will bite each other. They bite the butt. So it's okay for us to imitate the biting of the butt. Well, is it? Is it really? Or are we just creating that to justify our action? You know, is it okay to chase a horse versus driving a horse? Is that okay? Well, absolutely. You're going to see horses chase one another. It doesn't matter if they're wild or domestic. They're going to put their ears back, chase them. Absolutely. But is that okay for us, or are we justifying we're doing that? After all, we are not a horse. After all, we're just then showing the horse our true colors, and our true colors are that of dominance. You're going to find dominant behavior in horsemanship, i.e. with horses amongst one another. But if we truly want that trust, it's certainly not my belief that dominance has to creep in there. And I've watched so many wild horses in different continents and different states. I've watched domestic horses for two decades now to come to understand the difference between the passive leadership and dominance-based. And although these are the names being thrown out there, dominance can be that individual to say, okay, we're telling you what to do, not asking. We're going to get this done anyway. Well, there's going to be specifics, and we don't want to forget that. There's going to be time frames. There's going to be environmental challenges, and there's going to be ability challenges. But all of this comes back to who are you and who do you want to be? Who do you want to be in this world today? Do you see yourself as basically 5'2", smaller than a 1,400-pound horse, so therefore you carry a stick with you? So if you're not able to control the footfall, you're going to tell them how their feet need to be placed. Well, that's a fear-based stance, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because if we come from the trust-based position, yes, we need to build the respect and we need to build the space and the boundaries, but there's a certain way to do that, which is mutual respect and mutual understanding. And it's about the approach. It's about the intention. It's about the feel, and it's about the method. And so that's how we're moving forward into this next generation horsemanship, where people are expecting a difference. They're expecting their animal to be heard, and they're challenging people. And they are walking out and challenging to say, one, don't speak to me like this, and two, this doesn't feel right to me. And that's the question is, why doesn't it feel right? And there's certain boundaries that we definitely need, and that is you don't run over the top of me, you know, you don't bar your teeth at me and basically run at me, you can't kick me. These are basic boundaries to say, okay, mm-hmm. I'm not going to kick you, I'm not going to hurt you, but I expect the same back. But that doesn't make it dominance. That makes it respect. That makes it normal, because we're taking them out of their world, and now we've got to show them what's expected. And that would be no different than bringing somebody from another country here and showing them, look, this is how we operate in this world. And the same with bringing up a child, to show them this is how we expect to behave socially. And so that's the same. You're bringing in a foreign being into domestication, or they're already in domestication, and you're showing them this is how you need to behave to get along in society, to get along in this world. And not everybody has the luxury to have a horse as a pet or, you know, a lawn ornament. Not everybody has that luxury. And this is another question that people ask themselves, Judy, of how much is too much, or is it okay to have a working horse out there? Of course it is. You know, we all have to go to work, so it's okay to have a horse working cattle, or it's okay to be in a certain discipline or a performance horse. I'm not against that, and I see my world to be bridging the gap between all of this, to educate the people, to say, have you seen it this way and have you considered it this way? Because it's about that mutual respect and understanding, but also understanding the herd dynamics, the social hierarchy, to allow these horses have the interaction, to allow them to be as close to nature as possible for their own health.
Wow. And you know, you're in the equine industry a lot. Are you finding that a lot of people, I know there are probably some who will never get to this point of believing in trust-based horsemanship rather than dominance, but do you see a real shift in our cultures around the world,
you know,
really
you
having more respect
see,
for horses?
Yeah,
and
it, it's how you. Sorry to interrupt you. It's how you see it. It's one of those things that I appreciate going into the performance world and to bring in another perspective. And obviously the barns that are going to invite me to different locations are open. That's a big thing. And what's interesting about that is I might be invited in as a natural horsemanship clinician versus an animal communicator. So they may not believe in animal communication, but they believe in the horsemanship piece. So one can open a door for the other, which is fascinating to me. And so you would naturally think that you bring in each modality to become the language of the horse, but that's not always possible. And what you don't want is having the door slammed in your face so that you can't make any difference at all. So there's constant review of where do you stand in this and how do you want to be perceived and how can you be most effective? And some people may choose to go through the internet to do that. I like to get out there in the arena. I like to get out there and show people another way. So the question is so broad. I may go to a location where we're gentling mustangs only to discover that my techniques are certainly welcomed because we're gentling them with just us, ultimately, advance and retreat. It could be pole gentling, and it may actually be water gentling with a hose, for example, to gentle them down. But what we don't have is chutes. We're not putting them in a chute, and I'm not roping them and choking them down. So I may be invited to the same location where another clinician has roped them down. So you look at that to go, okay, that is still happening, and that is seen as natural horsemanship. Where if you look at the performance world, you're looking at the shoes, the bits, and some tie-downs. So some of the barns I operate at will have halters instead, or they will take any tie-down down. They might even not want the spurs. And if any equipment is used correctly, it could be okay. So a spur for a cue rather than abuse is fine. And what's the difference? We can get performance out of a horse if it's used correctly versus if it's slammed in the side drawing blood and removing hair. That's not really acceptable. So these are practices all over the world that are normal, in effect. So do I see the movement? I see extreme movements where people will go into the liberty work. And it's all about if the horse comes up to you, they want to know, and they're willing, they're offering, we'll bring them out. And it will be about positive reinforcement and dancing with horses. And that's great if that's the relationship you want. But as horses stand today, they're actually in the industry, not just performance horses and leisure, but they also have jobs such as life coaching, equine facilitated learning, equine growth, therapeutic riding. There's a ton of areas that they're in where they're going to be, to a point, required to step up for the day. And a number of the words being used would be trust and respect and leadership. Some will be control and compliance. So you look at when do we need that? Of course, if we're in the therapy world, there has to be a degree of it. Now, are we fooling ourselves when we think we have control? Because ultimately, this animal is huge and could decline any time. So we do need to create a relationship where they're on board and they're truly partnering with us. Because if they're not partnered, that's when the injuries and the accidents occur. So moving forward, I'm on your page. I think there's been a dramatic change, be it for the survival of the species. With more than 80,000 horses going to slaughter in the United States, probably annually, so we're looking at high numbers. Yeah, that's the number that got thrown out recently, and the same number, you know, the average age of a lot of horses in certain countries can vary between 6 and 8. That's the average age.
Average age?
Of a performance horse. So you look at these numbers and then you come back with what's happening in this injury. Because in the wild, you're looking at late teens, 20s. Totally taken care of, great care, you can look at 30s and 40s. Performance world, often 6, 7, 8. So it means that the athlete may not be receiving what they need. So in one sense, we're seeing the movement going forward where the horses are coming up into spiritual realms, and in another sense, we're still seeing an awful lot of horse slaughter. So I think the question's quite hard to answer, and I'd love to say absolutely everybody's moving forward into spirituality and recognizing how the horses have brought us forward, but that's actually not always the case if you start to look at 48,000 Mustangs in holding pens and more than 6,000 Premarin foals destined for slaughter. We have the nurse foals, thousands per year. So these are still undercover industries where the public haven't put the main focus on it to make that difference. So
would
be
you
it that
talk
misguided.
A little bit more about the Premarin? You brought that up. Just talk a little bit in case some of our listeners are not familiar with
not
that,
aware.
Please, Anna.
Yeah, Premarin stands for pregnant mare's urine, and Premarin is used for hormone replacement therapy for women as they go through the change. And it's been proven over a number of years, decades, that Premarin could cause heart issues and cancer, and so at some point it was pulled off the market. It has been relaunched, and the pharmaceutical companies bring it out, not just for HRT, hormone replacement therapy, but there's talk about it coming up in another product as well, which will involve
men. Oh, gee.
So, therefore, there's a lot of demand for it, and it's my understanding and my experience that doctors aren't educated on it. So that would mean the doctors may believe that these mares and foals run freely and that their lifestyles are okay, and the doctors I've spoken to are unaware that the foals are byproducts and that they're sent to slaughter. So what happens with the mare is they go on what's called a P-line, and they're standing on a little stool with like a catheter attached to collect the urine. Of course, they have to be pregnant, hence it's called pregnant mare's urine, and that urine will go to the pharmaceutical companies, and so hence the byproduct would be the foal. So it's quite a harsh industry, and if people are listening and saying, well, you know, it's worth it to change, you know, have this pill and have this cream and this product, it's not worth it, because these are innocent lives, and it's cruel to see these babies being ripped from their mothers, and it's cruel to see these mothers with physical and emotional and mental traumas going on for people when it's unnecessary. And unnecessary means there's plant-based products out there that could be actually a substitute for this particular product.
Exactly.
And so there's no need. Yeah.
Exactly, right. And people need to be educated. Is there anyone who's really taken this up with to educate doctors, to educate the public about it? I know I can speak from the primer, and I remember my mother was told by the doctor, well, you can take this, you know, And you might get cancer, though, you know. And she did end up with some cancer, but it was caught and everything. But she had some abnormal cells. But it's a real thing. It's just another side effect. And like, as you said, there are wonderful products out there. There are ways to cure cancer without killing beautiful animals, and that are really healthier for you, too, that don't have those negative side effects.
Right, and then there's some wonderful rescue organizations out there for the horses that specifically focus in on the Premarin mares and foals, and I've teamed up with many over the years. Equine Voices in Arizona, Karen's a great friend of mine. She's been doing it more than 10 years, and Frank Weller in Connecticut, and Ray of Light Farms in Connecticut, and I could go on. We've got so many associations with individuals that really getting it out there into the world. Where it comes to the doctors, I'm still trying to get an inroad there to be able to talk maybe at a convention or otherwise, just to show them what's happening to these horses, in effect, so that they can make an educated movement forward.
Yes, that would be great. There's got to be some doctor out there that will. I think Merlin or Oliver is agreeing with us.
Yeah, they had to chime in there on that one.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you know, and I did bring out a DVD. I called it Foals in Training, and it's a fly-on-the-wall DVD set on how to gentle foals and untouched horses, and there's a dedication in there. It's like a few minutes right at the back. It's a beautiful piece. Petey was lying down when I did this, and it come to me in a dream, and the next day, exactly when we started to film, I saw Petey lying down. I went to the film crew, we need to head here. And it was sharing with people of, do you know these guys are byproducts, and do you know you can make a difference? And it's up to the public. Nobody else. Without this demand, those babies wouldn't be sent this way. So the education's the key. And we've tried in the DVD. I continue to do it. It's not the end. Every year we have a foal gentling class. And this year, Judy, it's in Colorado. And actually August. Yeah, and it's not with Premarins. Just as sad, I get choked up on it. We brought it back to Colorado, and I've teamed up with a rescue, and I'll never forget it. We went and had lunch, and I said, you know, I'd love to do a class with you. Let's see how it goes. And we're going for those foals at feedlots. And his response was, how many do you need? And that's what got me choked up. It wasn't, you know, we can't find them. It was, it will be one trip to the feedlot. How many do you need? And what's happening is the mares are getting shipped off, and if they have a foal at foot, they're leaving them there. And that's just heartbreaking to me, of who in their right mind could do that. And so this year we're educating people on that fact of, are these mares giving birth there? Are these foals at foot? They're not sending the foals off because they're too young and it's illegal. So we're picking up those foals, we're rescuing them and gentling them as well. So any promotion one could get, press support, but it's hard to get the press involved. Some won't put their name to it. But the exposure is the key for the education. It's all about education. It's all about solution-based. And everybody can do it. It's not just about listening. It truly is about more than spreading the word. It's about taking action.
Yeah, taking action. And in what action could a person take? You know, I got a petition the other day that was regarding something similar to this. What action can people take, Anna? Do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, I think all of the horse world definitely needs it. And I do believe the petitions could be one way. I'm not necessarily thinking it's the way because there's so many petitions.
Right, exactly.
But I have heard, you know, educating the young, going into schools and educating them. I managed to do that at a Waldorf school one year and was quite gentle about it so that the children don't get scarred in the information mm-hmm. that they're hearing. But when the children write letters to the government, that makes a change. When the DVDs, when the material gets out on TV, you reach the masses. When press releases get out there and the press pick it up, you make a change. For individuals too, the writing of the letters, signing the petitions, even creating like evening educational DVD watching and making a change there. Of course, if it's primary and they get prescribed it, not to accept that and to educate the doctor, because the more people that say that, the doctors will look into it. So there's mm-hmm. something that everybody can do from this moment onwards. And it comes back to that fact. It doesn't matter if there's nurse foals or there's Mustangs. Educate yourself, because that wasn't the idea when the 1971 Act came out for the wild protection of the burros and the horses. I'm not sure it was going to, it wasn't envisioned that way. And with all these horses basically rounded up and being held, there's so many overheads. And yet the solution for me, the solution is PZP. It's reversible, it's non-hormonal, and it's a little shot that is with a dart that you just put it in the female's backside, and it lasts, depending on the weather and the climate and the location, et cetera, lasts about 9 months to a year. And what it means is we wouldn't have to round the horses up. We wouldn't have to break up the family groups. We wouldn't have to hold them in holding pens till they die. They would be out in nature. They could basically have their family lifestyles. There would be no culling taking place, and it's far cheaper than what's currently existing. So a lot of this change that can be made is educate yourself in the truth. And the truth is we have the solution of how the wild horses can live. It's a solution that Jay Kirkpatrick has found. He lives in Montana. It's a nonprofit. He goes around the world, supports zoo animals, supports wildlife. It goes for multiple species. Many, many of the BLM facilities, of the HMAs, the areas where these wild horses are already on PZP, but not all. But it is a solution, and it's working. It's working really well. So when you hear that the horses are starving out there, educate yourself to realize that right now our horses are looking pretty fit and pretty well. And yes, if there's overpopulation, that's another matter, but we can stop the overpopulation with PZP. This, for me, all comes under the natural horsemanship. It all comes under the next generation, because it's about preserving our horses to make sure there are horses out there from wild or domestication, that they're not being overworked and overused, and that we realize when we look at natural horsemanship, Judy, we're not just looking at the training, we're looking at the hoof care, the lifestyle, even the chiropractic, mm-hmm. the natural dentistry. We're looking at animal communication, energy healing, because the next generation horse person isn't just going to go, here's the system. Here's a seven-step system, that's natural horsemanship. Really? Really? That's 1% of what it is. What about the personalities? What about the learning styles? You know, what about getting the organic products, natural deworming, questioning vaccinations, looking at the horses being together so that they can have the mutual grooming, that the foals can learn from one another. Natural horsemanship goes beyond looking at a herd dynamic and then trying to reenact it in your favor. That's where we're going next. So reenactment would mean work versus rest. So one of that's a popular one, in a round pen, on the ground, trailer loading, bathing, whatever, work versus rest will mean we make it uncomfortable for them when they do the wrong thing, comfortable when they do the right thing. It's not something I won't use. I will use it, absolutely. But that's not the solution to everything, to go, okay, he won't load, so I'll circle him till he's sweating and he's tired, and then his only option is
to go
in there. You know what? That's not natural horsemanship. That's using the nature of the horse against him. Let's figure out why on earth he doesn't want to go in the trailer, shall we? Put him in there. What is it? Was there a trauma? Is the trailer too small? Is it too dark? Is he leaving his mates? Has she got the baby at foot and she's leaving the baby, and you're doing work versus rest? So you're using psychology of the horse, but you haven't looked at the whole picture. That's what I mean by next generation horse person.
I have a horse trailer story for you, Anna. I was at Estes Park with my family, and there is this horse trailer, and there was this man trying to get this horse into this horse trailer, and he was pulling it and hitting it and yelling at it, and I was standing there thinking, I can only take so much of this. And you know, I hadn't been around any horses for a long time, and as I stood there watching, I thought, if this doesn't end, I have to go over there and take him into the trailer myself. Now, like I said, I hadn't been around any horses, but it was like, I just can't let this animal be subjected to this. And
right.
So when I thought that, I thought, okay, I'm going to go over there. And all of a sudden, she must have been an angel, this woman appears. She walks up to the horse, takes the reins, and walks him into the trailer, just like that. And
wow.
I thought, wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
This guy had pushed and shoved and swore and pulled and beat him, and she walks up and just goes into the trailer with her. And I thought, boy, what a perfect example of, you know, of really respecting the animal. I just
that's it, right?
Amazed. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's
yes.
The beauty of it. And who knows what she brought in there? You know, was it telepathy? Was it her energy? Was it her intention? I don't know. But either way, she met the horse where the horse was at and showed another way.
Right.
And led by example. And that's the whole thing.
Oh, definitely.
And it's easy for people to get frustrated and say, okay, I'm on a time limit. I have to get this horse loaded, or justify why you keep on raising that level from the pressure on the nose, from the pressure from behind. And you would be horrified on those trailer loading stories. I've had horses where they have had dogs around their ankles. They use dogs to get the horses in. I've had a horse in Sweden where they used I think it was called a wrench, where they'd put it on the head collar and they're wrenching the horse in, so they're winding the horse in. And that was normal. Absolutely. And then you see the chains where there's no release. And then you see the butt ropes where the butt rope is incorrectly used and they're lifting the horse in. We've seen horses being picked up by men going in trailers. And we've seen horses lie down. And, you know, it's horrendous. The mind often can't even create what man is doing. And that's the sort of the glory when you start to travel, because you look at different traditions in different countries and what's become normal to them and what is acceptable to them, to then educate them in another way, to say, look, we've moved on from that. You know, now this is the way to look at it. So to realize that a horse, generally speaking, won't buck unless there's a reason, right? And the reason could be overfeeding, could be stalled too much, 23 hours a day. It could be that they're in pain, so back pain. Maybe that there's foot pain. Teeth haven't been looked at annually. The tack doesn't fit. It's the rider being imbalanced or the rider error. And there's so many scenarios as to why they might buck, and instead of thinking, look, this horse is horrible, the behavior is inappropriate, they're a bad horse, let's whip them through it, why not look at the cause? And so the cause is the key to explore, and some of it can be done with the natural horsemanship. So if I'm employed as a horsewoman, I'm going to look there, and I'm going to palpate the back, and even if I'm not qualified as a chiropractor, I can certainly sense and feel and see if there's scars and marks and open wounds, and if the horse collapses when I touch the back. So I can look at the basics. I don't have to be qualified as a saddle fitter to know if the saddle's caused it. I can see that and then bring in the professionals. But we need to look at that as the whole horse, to come back and go, have you stabled them 23 hours and you're feeding grain? Yeah, the horse is going to have the energy and do that. Are they herd bound? Yeah, they're going to buck on the way home to get there quicker if you're trying to stop them. So we start to look at the reasons behind it, because if we address them, we don't actually have a problem horse. There's no such thing as a problem horse, right? There's only problem people. And what that truly does mean is taking everything into account and not just coming in as a horse person to go, I can fix that. Let me ride that horse through the buck. Let me put them to work at the trailer. You know, let me basically create that forward motion with the whip no matter what. Well, let's discover why they're not doing it. And like I said, if I put them in a round pen, I might be able to look at the movement, and I can get that trust-based partnership through the language of the horse. But through the animal communication, I can get the cause, often that I wouldn't be able to get with what the eye can see. So there's a big difference between the two. And people sometimes get confused on that, maybe not so much on this show, but with the body language, what we're looking at, and the energetic connection, and certainly telepathy, because we can influence a horse's footfall and ask them to slow down, speed up, tell them what we're looking for through the visions and the two-way communication. But with the animal communication, like I said, we can discover the location of the pain, when it happened, where it happened, how it happened. We can look at if this is a direct reflection from the human or if this is the horse's path. There's so much more information that comes forward through the telepathy, the telepathic connection, that you could ever dream of getting from a horse by looking at their actions. And this all becomes one as we move forward. People are no longer looking just at systems. And yes, that's great for the backyard owner, and it's great because the left brain, the mind, is looking for the logic behind it. They're looking for something that's tangible to say, okay, if I do these steps, my horse will comply and basically connect. But this goes so much further, and people are moving into it. And if you look at the Rocky Mountain Horse Expo, we had standing room only on the animal communication lecture, standing room only on Are You the Leader You Would Follow? So certainly the minds are open for all kinds of individuals to say we're on a journey and we're discovering another aspect here of horsemanship.
Oh, yes, I love it. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful for you doing this, Anna, and all your fellow people who are doing, educating people. Now, I have a question. What do the horses say about, is there a horse collective, or is there, what do the horses say about how they're being treated by humans?
That's always an interesting question, and I certainly don't profess to be the knowledge behind that. And the reason being, I can certainly talk to the Council of Animals, i.e. as a collective, but I am so involved with it. And if I look at the collective of Mustangs, my view would be jaded by what I know. And my view is certainly jaded by what's happening to them. And I've heard over the years that the Mustangs accept their fate, that they know they're going to be rounded up and they accept all that's happening to them because it's here to educate man, and I highly disagree. I'm not sure if 48,000 Mustangs stripped from nature and from their family groups, castrated and left in what I perceive to be a concentration camp know what their mission is here for. So what happens then, Judy, is when you have such a passion that you can hear in my voice, I would not mm-hmm. be the individual to talk to the collective. And I would actually step to one side and allow somebody else to do that who's less involved than myself.
Now, you say, I appreciate your honesty in that, Anna, thank you. Now, you say 48,000 are in holding pens? They're just
yes.
like a stockyard, like they have animal feedlots. They're like in a pen like that?
We have them in Colorado. We have Canyon City. And at the time when I visited there, there were 2,800. And what you see is sand lots, sand pens. And depending on which roundup has recently taken place, they may put different ages into different pens. Automatically when they come in, they receive a little neck band with a number on it. They also receive the branding on the neck. And I don't know if they're trimming the feet or not, but they're certainly castrating them. And so once they've gone through that procedure, this becomes pretty much their forever home. Now, in Canyon City, a number of the prisoners are gentling them down. But again, when I visited, they had gentled no more than 14 in 1 year. So although the program can be seen as quite effective to help prisoners, prisoners in their mentality and to help them through the crime that they've committed, I understand and appreciate the program. I don't believe that 14 is actually a positive step forward. I think that more effective would be, of course, higher numbers. And then from that, one would look at the adoption rate, and the adoption rate is not high. And so there's other holding pens and holding facilities, also Rock Springs. So this year, we're again rescuing 10 Mustangs, and we've done this for years now. And I team up with a great Reach Out to Horses trainer of mine, Michelle Dimmock, and she's going to Rock Springs actually this month and bringing home 10 Mustangs, and we're going to be gentling them on the Reach Out to the Untouched Horse Clinic. And so far, so good. We've got a great adoption rate, because what happens is people don't know how to gentle the Mustangs, and they're so street smart that they can keep a human at bay. And they can keep them at bay for years. So you could feed them a carrot through the fence but never get a halter on. That's the smartness. And what happens is if people don't get their halters on in a reasonable time fashion, after 1 year where they get the rights to the horse, they can do with that horse what they want. So if that horse has not been gentled and they're not riding them or they're not leading them or for whatever purpose they got, they've not achieved it, that horse can be sold. And you know as well as I do what happens to a horse that's ungentled, that nobody wants. They're going to be shipped to Mexico or Canada. So that program, after 1 year when they get the title of the horse, is not effective for the preservation. So we look at the quantity that's being adopted out and the quantity left in those holding pens, 48,000 in holding pens. 28,000 out in the wild. The program's not working. So, rescuing 10 isn't great. I'm proud that we're rescuing 10, and I'm proud that we find homes for 10. And ultimately, their fate has been sealed. So we wouldn't want to put them back from where they came from. We would want them to find their home. If we can, we would gentle them to the point where they can have that one-on-one. There's the occasional one that will fight for their freedom, and then we look for an adoption with a sanctuary, which is hard to come by. We have one. She's been there a number of years in Cody, and she's definitely expressed she doesn't want to be gentled. And so she's looking for a sanctuary, and we are actively looking for a sanctuary to be able to take her to give her back her freedom. And they deserve it. These guys deserve it. They don't all want to have that domestication. But if the answer is a holding pen versus gentling down, then, of course, the gentling down allows them to have a good life.
Wow, it's amazing what animals put up with the humans. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
Just amazing. And they are such great gifts to us. So, wow. Well, Anna, do you have any words that you would like to leave our audience with This has been absolutely fantastic. I just, you know, it gets frustrating, though. It's how can we get the word out about this?
Yeah.
And it's, yeah.
And like I said, for me, it is actually about the media, and it's about getting the word to the masses. And the education is a solution. I'm not always about looking at the problem. It's about the solution, and we've got a new Mustang DVD coming out this year with the solution on it so that people know, look, these guys are icons. They're a tourist attraction. Let's keep them out there. If we have to look at the monetary terms in support of the horses, we have a tourist attraction that nobody else has. That's amazing. Let's preserve them that way. And so, yes, I believe that everybody can take action. I believe that the next generation horse person will be looking at what can we do for you today? How can we serve you today? Let's stop looking at making it our way and the highway about control and about compliance, but instead about learning to listen to their communication, to realize that they're the most forgiving species on the planet, that they do put up with so much, and that if we're looking at our leisure and pleasure, we need to make it as comfortable for them as possible and bring it back to as natural as it can be, and not just hone in on the training to go, okay, I'm a natural horse person, but to look at the whole horse, to look at if the horse is happy, are they volunteering, do they want to be with you? How do they expect life to go? What are their dreams and aspirations? And if people can't intuitively go into that, take this as a journey, because there's so much education out there to support you on this path, to say, I do want to make a difference, be it with my horse or be it with the masses. But the education of oneself to say, I'm open to this. I know my heart sings when I look into this, to not ignore it and to move forward, to not allow things to happen that you see that hurt you, and look at the right way to move forward to be a voice for the voiceless.
That's great. Yes, thank you. I wonder if little Joseph is going to lead the way for the next generation horse whisperers.
You know, luckily I got the chills when you said that. Of course I'd love that.
Oh, really?
It's funny, I did get the chills, but I'd love that, and how amazing. And I can, again, only show him the way to appreciate the horses. And we started with, you know, when he was just 3 months old, to say, okay, say thank you to the horses. And he pets them. And I want him to appreciate, admire, listen, and to respect them. And that mutual respect can only come if you truly respect them. You can't expect it. You've got to deserve it. You've got to earn it. And this is the key for that next generation, to say, what comes naturally to you, this generation had to trailblaze. And if we can trailblaze now, they're just going to walk into that and know that the impossible is possible.
That would be great. So I think this conversation should be posted on various horse sites on Facebook, shouldn't it?
Oh, that would be fabulous. And you'd be amazed as to what would come back from it. very mixed opinions and views, but if people realize that I'm coming from a heart space, I truly am. I'm just trying to bring in another perspective, is what. And nobody's critiquing others. It truly is this. If we know what's out, then we know what's good, and we know what works. Let's move into that.
Well, you know, the world seems to be moving in a direction of more heart centeredness. More love, more caring of the people who are interested in animal communication. It's really, really amazing. Although I did meet a lady the other day who said, looked at me in the dog park and said, "You believe in that stuff?" You know, but it's interesting. But just hearing it once, if someone says something about animal communication and actually believes that the animals talk. If a person hears that enough, they might get to thinking, maybe there's something to it. So we can all do our parts on a daily basis. I do it in the dog park.
And so, that's exactly it. That's how it trickles down, and the ripple effect is huge. And a lot of it is about people, day-to-day people, believing this, because it's only a belief away. It's just a belief away.
Right, and I found when I share some of those things that people find, may think are a little weird with other dog people in the dog park, oftentimes they have no one else. They are thinking that way, but they have no one else to speak with to about it. So, like I said, we can all educate others in our own way, and also just by being that heart-centered person too. So, Anna, this has been wonderful. Thank you so very, very much.
And I just want
to tell you, if you want more information, just go to Anna's wonderful website, reachouttohorses.com. I watched the phenomenal video that is on her homepage last night, and it brought tears to my eyes. It's absolutely beautiful. And also a reminder for a non-toxic, chemical-free repellent of fleas, ticks, and mosquitoes, please check out petsagainstchemicals.com. And if you want support in being the magnificent person that your animal already knows that you are, just go to jazzupyourlifewithjudy.com, and you'll be able to listen for free to some very remarkable speakers. So until next time, this is Simba and Judy saying thank you for joining us. Have a magical day, and we are sending you off with much love.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.